Good morning, everyone. Big story, of course, the arrest of Julian Assange, not unexpected in Britain. We'll have more about that. He'll appear in court in Britain sometime later today. There have been official charges filed. We'll follow that as the details emerge throughout the morning, I suspect. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is off for a few days. With me in the studio is Majora Carter, the host of American Public Media's Promised Land and a local development strategist for the Majora Carter Group. Also with us is David Biello, associate editor of Environment and Energy at Scientific American Online. David, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I should say to both of you, welcome back to the program. You've been a guest on the program before, Majora.
Yes.
And David, we've talked to you every time there's one of these climate change talks. How do you rank Cancun's narrative based on what happened at Copenhagen, where it seemed as though the concern was whether the U.S. and China would make a big side deal, and nations like India and Brazil were striving to get, at the main table?
Well, it's certainly not as exciting as Copenhagen, as you might recall. There was a lot of expectation that some kind of a global deal would come out of Copenhagen. And it took kind of the last-minute intervention of President Obama to deliver a somewhat maybe half-hearted effort called the Copenhagen Accord. He actually busted into a room where the presidents of Brazil, South Africa, India, and China were sitting and kind of forced them to the negotiating table, which is some real backroom diplomacy. Here in Cancun, it's mostly ministers and actual climate change negotiators. And given the fracture that occurred in Copenhagen with the countries that support the Copenhagen Accord versus the countries that support its ancestor, the Kyoto Protocol, there's a lot of work to do to kind of repair that rift.
And I suspect a lot of cynicism. 193 nations. It's the second week of talks at the UN Summit on Climate Change. It's in Cancun, Mexico. Majora Carter, as someone who's very active on these issues at the local level, you're not even following these talks.
I have very low expectations, yes.
And that would be because it's not the kind of problem that works with these sorts of top-down solutions?
It's more about the fact that there's an issue with whether or not we can change that system quickly in order to see real change happening on the ground, as opposed to doing something that actually is going to be meaningful to people right now.
What's the disconnect, David Biello, between what these protocols do in terms of putting nations in some sort of accountable framework for their carbon emissions and what is, as Majora Carter suggests, meaningful to people on the ground?
Well, it's kind of the disconnect between any kind of large government policy and what folks are doing in their day-to-day lives. So we're talking, as you mentioned, about 193 countries trying to come to agreement on what to do about greenhouse gases. They almost got there with the Kyoto Protocol, which I mentioned earlier. But unfortunately, most of the large countries or the large emitters that signed up to that ended up ignoring it. The most egregious example is Canada. They were supposed to cut by around 6%. And they ended up adding about 30% to their greenhouse gas emissions. And that is the cumulative effect of what a lot of people are doing on the ground day to day. How we can get around that problem is the challenge of the next several years.
Well, let's sort of talk which is the dog and which is the tail here. Majora Carter, is it possible that world leaders don't have the mandate to do and make the hard choices because people on the ground aren't making those similar kinds of choices, aren't demonstrating that there is a kind of a wave in support of large-scale climate change?
We also don't necessarily have a Wall Street economy that actually supports that either. There's a great article in Responsible Investor by Mindy Luber from Ceres, who's an investor and Environmental Group Coalition. And you know, she talked about the fact that there's investors and the structures around them that reward short-term performance and quarterly returns as opposed to what are the long-term impacts of not doing something that's environmentally sound and not including all the externalities of the fossil fuel industry that existed, you know, since they discovered oil in Pennsylvania. And if you do that, then you know, people don't necessarily see they're more worried about what's happening in terms of jobs and economic development in their local communities. And so that's why one of the reasons why we are so focused on not so much climate mitigation, which is what you're going to hear about in Cancun, but more about climate adaptation, because water scarcity, flooding, those type of issues, stormwater management things, those are the things that, you know, people, municipalities really understand, like, how are they going to deal with the issues that are being impacted by the change in climate.
And are going to be here long term.
Exactly.
And David Biello, before we go, is there some way in which international agencies need to exercise their long term thinking? Because, of course, the climate change clock is measured in thousands of years. And 4 years is a long term, you know, a U.S. presidential cycle. That's long term for most of these folks, right?
That's true. There is a big disconnect on timescales. But what I'd emphasize is that this is, you know, whether you talk about it from climate change or you talk about it from an economic perspective, this is our future prosperity. Addressing this issue via the green economy, via renewable energy technology, via electric cars, however you want to address it, that's where the jobs of the future are going to come from. The only question is, who's going to have those jobs?
You know, I can imagine a science fiction novel in the future where there are the Copenhagenites versus the Kyotoids. Is this a division between people who support Kyoto versus Copenhagen going to be resolved at this conference, David Biello?
It certainly is not. The Copenhagen Accord is largely a large country's club, and if you look at the WikiLeaks cables, you can see how the U.S. has kind of pressured a lot of folks to try to sign up to it. The Kyotoids, as you put it, are mostly the small island states and
right.
Developing countries who are really on the front lines of the impacts of climate change that are already showing up.
So it sounds like a James Cameron movie, actually, the Kyotoids versus the Copenhagenites. Kyoto expires in 2012. What's the next step?
There is no next step right now. Even Japan, which, of course, gave the Kyoto Protocol its name, says we're done with this. We need to move on. The Copenhagen Accord is kind of the only game running, and what they're trying to figure out is what parts of the Kyoto Protocol will be saved and what will happen in 2012. But it's pretty clear there won't be a direct
Kyoto 2
successor.
Exactly. David Biello, Associate Editor of Environment and Energy at Scientific American Online. And Majora Carter here in the studio, it's Development Strategist for the Majora Carter Group, talking about the Cancun talks and the Kyoto Protocol, which expires in 2012. Not a lot of renewed faith in international leaders, Majora, there?
No, but I have a lot of faith in things that are happening on the ground in terms of horticultural infrastructure.
We'll talk about that when we come back from the headlines.